This morning's scripture reading will be read from the book of Luke, chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, as she went up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." You may be seated.
Good morning. It's great to be able to come and worship God together, and we're thankful that you're here. I am excited about thinking with you this morning about what motivates you. Seems that when you think about motivation, a lot of people think about climbing mountains and using that as a metaphor, as an analogy of whatever that goal is, whatever that task is. We've got to meet the challenge and climb that and achieve that. I like even how Jeff, without us talking about it, he sung Hilltops of Glory and getting up on that mountain. So we're thinking about this idea of what motivates us to accomplish our tasks and our goals that we need to accomplish as an individual, as a family, and as a church. Now, I have had friends. I have one friend in Colorado who's a preacher, and he has climbed all of the 14,000-foot mountains in Colorado. That was his goal. He lived out there. He did it all. I've not done that. I did climb one mountain in the Smoky Mountains this past February, Mount La Conte. It was an 11-mile hike, 5.5 up, 5.5 back, and there was some challenge in that, and what we were motivated to do that, to see the sights, to enjoy that time together, and to say we had done that, and you had to breathe pretty hard. At least I was. Amanda wasn't breathing that hard, but I was breathing pretty hard and struggling at times climbing up that mountain, and we had to go through some water and other challenges, and get up on top and enjoy the view, and then, of course, head back down and have that time on the mountain. But when we think about motivation, it reminds me of a story about an old farmer from years back who kind of got in one of these arranged marriage situations, and he was heading home, and he told his future bride, or his wife now, who didn't know each other that well, and he said, "Now, here's going to be a list for you of duties I want you to do. I want you to get up every morning when I do, right and early before the sun comes up, and I want you to prepare breakfast for me and have breakfast for me ready. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to work hard, and I want you to come back and I want you to have lunch ready, and I want you to have supper ready that evening. And I want you to keep the house clean. I want you to take care of the necessary farm chores that are going to be your responsibility, and we're going to make this life work as on this homestead, on this farm. We're going to make it work." And that lady had not fallen in love with him. Like I say, it was kind of more of an arranged marriage. And they went on through life, and she did that. She had sometimes even struggled with a little bit of bitterness toward that, but she did what he asked to do out of duty. And they made their marriage work. They had a family with kids, and they made their farm work. And she became a habit for her to do those things he had asked her to do, and they made life work. Something happened one day, though, when he was in his 40s, and he died out working. She then, over the period of time, fell in love with the man. He also had been a widower. And they fell in love. And they began and decided to get married. And they started, he was a farmer too, and they started farming. And she instinctively started getting up, just as she had always done, fixing him breakfast, having it ready, doing the necessary chores she needed to do around the house to make the farm work, having him lunch and having him supper, just as she always had before. But she found that she did these things not out of duty, but out of love. And they grew in their love for one another more every day, and she found it fascinating how she would be excited to enjoy breakfast with him and look forward to spending supper with him because she loved him. Now, that's a fictitious story. But you know that things like that happen in marriage, and they especially happened 100 years ago in marriage, didn't they? Now, what I'm asking you, when you think about your relationship with Jesus, are you here this morning because it's duty? And you read the list, and the list said you got to be here, and you're here. Or are you here this morning because you fell in love? Because you love Jesus, and you love God, and you wouldn't want to be anywhere else. You see, what motivates you? Motivation is the key to everything in the church. Motivation is the key to everything in the church. For example, let's look at the Bible and think about how love is to be the primary motivation for everything we do. In Matthew 22, 37 through 39, Jesus gives the greatest commandment: love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. Love is the main motivation for what we do. In John chapter 14, verse number 15, Jesus says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." The duty comes out of love. You will keep my commandments if you love me. The church at Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2 is rebuked by Jesus, not because they're not doing the right things. They were doing the right things, but they had left their first love. They had lost the love. Love is the main motivating factor for the Christian. Look at the passage that JT read in Luke chapter 10. We have the story of Mary and Martha. And I want you to notice that you and I are oftentimes like this story. There was a woman named Martha, verse 38, who had welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. So Mary was sitting there, but Martha was distracted with much serving. She went up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." Martha was serving, why? Out of duty. She felt like it was the dutiful thing to do. It was the role she needed to play as the host. And she was upset that the other sister, Mary, was not serving out of duty. A lot of people, you and I fall into this category sometimes, don't we? A lot of people are worried and troubled about many things. Jesus would answer and say, in verse 41, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things." There's a lot of worries, a lot of troubles that we have. There's a lot of anxiety and pressure when we think about our lives today. And we need to come back to what Jesus says to Mary. "But Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." We've got to ask ourselves, are we choosing the good portion? We can get distracted and busy with many things, but are we choosing love? Are we choosing to be motivated by the good portion? I like the phrase that I heard years back: the enemy of the best is often the good. The enemy of the best is often the good. That Martha was doing something that was good, but it wasn't the best. We can do many things that are good, but not do the best. You see, we need to choose the best in our motivation for the church by loving Jesus. When you think about the biblical teaching on this, when we think about motivation being the key, there's some other scriptures that show that we should be motivated. For example, in 1 Peter chapter 1, if you would look with me there, think about what the Lord offers us. When we think about the motivation and how we should be motivated out of love, like the song that we sung about the love of God and how immeasurable the love of God is. Look at verses 3 through 9. Peter talks about the great mercy that we have. how we've been born again to a living hope. Verse 4, how we have an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. In verse 6, he says, in this you rejoice, though you may be going through various trials at this time. He says, verse 8, though you have not seen him, what do? We love him. We love him. Though you do not see him, yet you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. We've got a lot of reasons to love. A lot of reasons to want to serve and be motivated to serve Christ. Look at Titus chapter 2. Not only should the great love of God motivate us, but the great grace of God should motivate us. He's reserved for us in heaven this inheritance for us. The salvation of our souls is there. And then chapter 2, verse 11, the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions, to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present world, waiting for the blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ. The grace of God has appeared. What motivates us? The grace of God, the blessings of God, all these things. In Ephesians chapter 3, he's talking about the love of God, and it reminds me of the song that we sang this morning. And he talks about in verse number 17, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And then he says, verse 18, that you may have the strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth, the length, and the height, and the depth. He's talking about the measurements of the love of God. To know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. What motivates us? The love that God has shown us should motivate us. It ought to inspire us. We ought to be like Mary, who wants to choose the best. Not just do things out of duty, but do things out of love and joy for Christ and what Christ has offered for us. I think about Jesus. Even the joy that was set before him endured the cross. What motivated Jesus? It was that joy. It was that love of the Father that he had. The love that he had for us. For God so loved the world. God loved us. Love must be the motivating factor. Motivation is the key. If we're motivated by love, then every program of the church, every ministry of the church, will have its needs met. Why? Because people are motivated. They're enthused. You understand this to be the case. If we're going to do any kind of project, it matters in its determination whether that project will succeed based upon if people are motivated and get behind it, we say. We were going to build this building. People had to get behind it. They had to get behind that process. They had to get behind and be motivated to sacrifice and give thousands of dollars. They had to be motivated to give a lot of their time to accomplish that task. There had to be a motivation. Why are we motivated to do whatever we do? Motivation is the key to every successful thing in the church being successful. It takes motivation. But we often lack motivation. You know, it's easy to drive by the car, drive by the mountain in the Smoky Mountains and say, that mountain looks pretty up there, but I sure don't want to hike it. And we're easy to do that with a lot of things in the church too, aren't we? Or a lot of things in our life. To drive by and say, you know what, I know this needs to be done, but I'm just going to pass right on by. We can look at our own challenges in our own life, our own families, our own individual things that we want to accomplish, whether it's more Bible study or more a deeper prayer life or whether it's attending church regularly. And we can say, you know what, I know I need to be involved, for example, in our Wednesday night Bible study class, but I think I'm just going to pass by that mountain. That's going to mean affecting my daily life, and I'm just going to pass by that. You see, that whatever mountain it is, whatever challenge it is, it's easy to lack motivation to accomplish it, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to get too personal here, but how many of you are still doing your New Year's resolutions you started in January. Somewhere along the line, the motivation waned, didn't it? The gyms aren't as busy. I drive by the YMCA regularly. It's not as busy as it was in January. People are not as motivated as they were then. Motivation wanes. It does in my life. It does in yours. But we often lack motivation. And so we are like, I got some good company for you. We're like the disciples. We are like them. In fact, the disciples lack motivation. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 16. Because even the great apostle Peter, he struggled to understand and to have proper motivation. In Matthew 16, after Jesus, after Peter had hit the mountain, I mean, he was up on top of the mountain. He said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus said, "You're right, Peter. Upon this rock, I'm going to build my church." And then right after that, Peter says, when Jesus began to tell about his death, Peter took him aside, verse 22, and began to rebuke Jesus. You know, you can rebuke a lot of people. But the one person you don't need to be rebuking is Jesus. And Peter got that wrong, didn't he? He began to rebuke him and say, "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you." But Peter had the same problem that Martha had. He turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are a hindrance to me. For you're not setting your minds on the things of God, but on the things of man." You're distracted, Peter. You're motivated by all these side things. You're looking at all these other things. You got all kinds of worries and concerns going on. And you're not focused on the things of God. You're doubting. Later on in chapter 17, we realize that they were all the apostles, in verses 22 and 23, were distressed, greatly distressed, when he tells them he's going to die and be buried and raised the third day. And later in chapter 20, Jesus had to continue to tell them that he's going to die, be buried, and raised the third day. And later in Luke 24, after the resurrection, this is after Jesus has been resurrected, we see that they are still, look at the disciples in verses 10 and 11. They hear from the women that the tomb was empty. And look at verse 11. "But these words seemed to them as idle tales, and they did not believe them." Wait a minute. This is like a parent talking to his kids. "Clean your room. Clean your room. Clean your room." And then you go in and 2 hours later and you look at the room and you think, "This room is filthy. Didn't they ever hear me?" And the kid says, "Wait a minute, did you tell me to clean my room? I didn't know you told me to clean my room." Maybe that just happens in our house. That Jesus kept saying, "I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to be buried. I'm going to be raised." And then it happens. And the disciples say, that's a fable. That's an idle tale. I don't believe that. And then if you look down at chapter 24, verse 21, there's two disciples, not apostles, but two disciples who are walking on the road. And they are talking about how we had hoped that Jesus was going to redeem Israel, but now it seems that all those things have collapsed. And they said there's the tomb found empty, and we don't even know what to make of that. These apostles, these disciples, lacked motivation and lacked understanding. They didn't get it. They didn't get it. They didn't get that Jesus was going to die. They didn't get that they were supposed to live. Jesus spent 3 years preparing them to take over and do the ministry of the church when he left. And they didn't get it. They lacked motivation. But if you look at this same passage, Luke 24, it took someone helping them before they got it. If you look at the apostles in verses 25 through 27, these two men who are on the road to Emmaus, Jesus will begin to preach to them. Verse 26, he explains about how the Christ was going to suffer. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them all the scriptures and the things concerning himself. And their eyes are open, and they realized it was Jesus in verses 31 and 32. And then down in verse 44, the overall apostles, when he appears to them, They are going to meet the Lord, and these are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. And he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And they got it. Now let me bring all this home for you, and I want you to really see this point. You and I can be like the disciples. I mean, we all do it. And I appreciate so much what Marty said to begin our worship this morning. How we all need encouragement. We need each other. The disciples were struggling and could not get the most elementary and basic part of the gospel. And they needed Jesus. They needed someone to explain to them and encourage them and open their eyes to it. You know, you and I need one another. And it may be that someone in your life needs you to motivate them. You know, motivation is mutual. We need others to help motivate us. And you may be the one who motivates someone else to love Jesus. You see, all of us should be motivated. Every one of us should be motivated. Everybody out there in the world should be motivated to love Jesus. But people aren't. In fact, you and I are guilty sometimes. Many times we're not motivated to love Jesus like we should. And you're sitting in this morning and you may be thinking, I struggle with motivation. Well, maybe I'm the one who is helping you today to realize that you need to be motivated. Maybe it's going to be your spouse who can help you by their example and their words to motivate you to want to become a Christian or grow and accomplish and climb that mountain. I wouldn't have climbed that mountain if it hadn't been for Amanda. I wouldn't just do that by myself. We were doing that together. And most people, I was talking to Brenda Wilson. She went, and I think she's not here this morning, right? She went down because her son-in-law was running as a pacer for someone. And these people that run these long races, which seems crazy to me, but they often will have people, friends that go that will help them run beside them to keep pace. Why? Because you need motivation. You need someone to run with you. We need motivation. The purpose of the church, all of us know what we should be doing, but many times we don't do it. We need motivation. And it may be me preaching, it may be your family member, it may be a Bible class teacher, it may be another Christian lady or a Christian man that motivates us. And listen, you may be the one that needs to motivate someone else to come along somebody and say, look, you haven't been to church in a while. Or look, you got talent. You got gifts that you're not using. This is an opportunity. When I saw this opportunity, when I saw the church needed this, I thought of you. Because I know you can do it. And they may look at you and say, really? You thought I could do that? And I say, yeah, I really believe that if you put yourself to it, you could do that. And you know what? They may be surprised. And it may be the encouragement they needed to do it. Because they didn't know anybody believed in them. Motivation is the key to everything in the church. This is why it's so important for you to be present, because your presence motivates others. You ever have a church event and only two or three people show up? It's a downer, isn't it? Just your presence motivates others. Motivation is the key to everything in the church. But we often lack motivation, so therefore we've got to motivate one another. Jesus had to motivate his apostles. The apostles had to motivate one another. We've all got to motivate each other. We need people. We need help to motivate each other. And so then I want to end with three questions. So are you motivated? So are you motivated? Here's three questions to ask yourself. Are you in love? Are you in love? When I think about motivation, this all gets back to love. Where we started, right? The example I gave you of the woman who could serve out of love, and about how all of us should serve out of love. Let me give you another illustration. It seems like marriage goes well with these illustrations as we relate to Christ. But let's say you're having an anniversary, and it's your 10th anniversary, let's say, and the husband lady shows up, and he really is doing it well this time. He showed up with flowers when he got off work that day. And you say, oh, I appreciate the flowers. Thank you so much. And he says, no problem. It's just my duty. It's our 10th anniversary. I didn't know if you knew that, but it's 10th anniversary. So I got you flowers. And then he says, we need to go out to eat tonight. Why do we need to go out to eat tonight? Well, it's our 10th anniversary. And on your 10th anniversary, you're supposed to go out to eat. So they go out to eat. And they're sitting there eating. And she says, it's so sweet of you to take me out to eat on our 10th anniversary and to buy me flowers. I mean, I really appreciate it. He said, no problem. It's my duty. I knew that a good husband should take out his wife on the 10th anniversary. Now, how long is this going to go on before the wife's going to feel like, am I just your duty? Wait a minute. I don't really want to be just your duty. I kind of want you to what? Love me. I want you to enjoy being with me. In other words, I want you not just to be at the meal because you've got to take me out and we've got to get food because we've got to eat supper. But I want you to want to be in my presence. I want you to enjoy me. Are you enjoying God? The psalmist says, delight in the Lord. Do you love God? Do you love Jesus? If you don't love Jesus, then you need to spend more time reflecting on how much He loves you. Did you hear me? If you don't love Jesus, then you need to spend more time reflecting upon how much He loves you. He loves you far more than you can ever imagine. And He's offered you more than anyone or anything or any temporal pleasure of this world ever could. Are you in love? Secondly, are you growing? In Galatians chapter 6, verse number 9, the Bible says we must not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not lose heart. In Ephesians 4, verse 15, it says, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ. In 2 Peter 3:18, the Bible says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord. Are you growing? If you are not growing, then you're not motivated very much. Our schools have gotten back started with a lot of sports going on. Football's going on. I guess golf's going on. Probably some other volleyball's going on. And all these different sports are going on. And the coaches in all those sports, no doubt, are talking a lot about, from the very beginning, the first practice, we've got to grow. I want you to improve. I want us to get better. It's always about growing. It's always about getting better. From the first day of practice to the last game, we've got to be improving. You've got to be getting better as an individual, and the team's got to be getting better as a whole. It's about growing. And growing is all about motivation. So the coach has the job of what? Motivating the team. We've got to stay motivated. On the first day of practice, he's trying to motivate them to work hard, whether it's lifting weights or running or practicing. You've got to be motivated as a team to accomplish that goal. But the motivation is so that we'll grow. If you're not growing, the problem is your motivation. So are you stretching yourself? Are you watching, doing, and going? We're going to have a Bible school workshop today for people that want to watch, grow, and learn how to better to be a Bible school teacher to the younger kids. We learn not by making excuses, but we grow when we step out there on faith and we try to stretch ourselves. We try to improve. Are you motivated? Are you growing? And finally, are you hungry? Now, whenever you work hard, you get hungry. If you have some of us don't fall totally into this, but sometimes if you have a real lazy morning, you know, you're not going to be that hungry at lunch. Now, like I say, there may be a few exceptions there, but generally speaking, if you work really hard, if you're out doing some manual work in the yard, or you're doing something, you're going to get hungry, right? And hard work causes you to be hungry. Well, I want you to think about that when it comes to motivation. When we work hard, then we should be hungry. In Hebrews chapter 5, the Bible speaks of this same idea. And it talks about how some are still drinking and eating milk, and they haven't moved on to solid food. And he says, verse 14, "But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil." If you're not hungry for solid food, if you're still happy with milk, then you're not working hard enough. You know that baby? Baby gets tired of drinking milk at a while. They don't sleep all night. They get hungry. They want some more substance because milk, even though milk fills them up when they're an infant, they need more. Pretty soon they're going to need a lot more. I bet all of you don't want to just have milk for lunch, do you? But let me tell you something. If you're still happy with milk in your spirituality, there's a problem. If you're not hungry for more, and you've been a Christian for several years, there's a problem. You ought to want to know the Bible more. You ought to want to be involved in the church more. You ought to want to be a stronger Christian. And if you're not hungry, there's a problem. It means you're not working hard enough. You know, if you went out and worked hard years ago, you know, when you were a kid in the tobacco fields or hay field or something, someone said to you, "You're not even going to be very hungry because you hadn't been pulling your weight. You hadn't been doing nothing. Maybe you're the one driving the truck or something. The rest of the guys have been back there working. They're going to say what? Man, they're hungry. Why? Because they've been working hard. If you're not working hard spiritually, you're not hungry. And the more you work, the more you want to know Jesus. And the more you want to do for Jesus. And so are you motivated? Motivation is the key to everything in the church. Are you in love? Are you growing? And are you hungry? This morning, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, we want to encourage you to do that. If you want to be restored and rededicate your life, and as Paul or as Jesus told the church at Ephesus, to return to their first love, if you need to return to your first love, if you need to be motivated this morning, we want to encourage you. And if you need to do that in a public way so you can have more encouragement and so everybody can pray for you and everybody can encourage you, then take that step so that more people can motivate you. If we can help you in any way, please come as together we stand and as we sing.